Good afternoon.
Good evening, everybody. This is Captain Tinsley, Salty Bannon, with a salty quickie. Not a salty quickie. I'm sorry. I'm kind of doing things at once with a salty podcast. And this is episode number 18. We're moving right along. I got a special guest tonight, a celestial navigation expert. And I've always wanted to learn this. I'm fascinated with it. I know a lot of people are. So I'm going to go ahead and try to bring him out. He's having some technical difficulties, but looks like he's got it together now.
Hello.
Chris, what should I call you? Commander?
You could just call me Chris.
Okay. So this is Commander Chris Kreitlin?
Kreitlin.
Okay. Yeah. I turned up your volume just a little bit. I do have to cough. Okay. Retired U.S. Navy. I was trying to get that out. Now, while I'm coughing, maybe you can explain how you got wrapped up in celestial navigation.
Okay. I joined the Navy and went to officer candidate school, and they taught us the rudimentary procedures of celestial navigation. I can't really say I learned it. But anyway, after that, I went to a ship as an ensign in the Navy, and I relearned it for my warfare qualification, we call it. And then I flew in the Navy, and I never used it. So after I retired, I decided I would take up sailing, and I wanted to learn celestial navigation again. So I studied it. And learned it really on my own. I didn't take any classes, but, you know, I had a rudimentary understanding of it already. So that's what happened. And I studied a lot of the books, manuals, all of those self-help guides, and really taught myself. But as I was doing that, I said, well, okay, these manuals, these books are good, but I think I can write a better one. So that's what I did. I wrote my own manual. And of course, teaching something is the best tool for learning it. So I wrote my own manual, and really then I learned it well and began teaching it after that.
And there's the book, Simple Celestial Navigation by the Heavens Made Easy. If you're going to order this book, I have a description in the, I have a link in the description. Please use that link. No matter what platform you're watching, the description, it's in the description. So, and the reviews are great on Amazon. It's like 4.4. So that's pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So I do have some questions for you, but feel free to freeform.
Okay.
Explain what celestial navigation is and why it's relevant for sailors today.
Okay. Let me give just a couple minutes of the history of celestial navigation.
That's great. Yeah.
Of course, the Greeks divided the world into latitude and longitude. Well, latitude is easy to determine by observing the North Star. Unfortunately, the North Star is not really a good star to use because it's rather dim. But if you take a shot of the North Star, the angle from the horizon up to the North Star will give you your latitude. So sailors were able back then to figure their latitude rather easily. So they would get the North Star where they wanted it on a particular latitude and sail on that latitude. Now, you have to remember, way back then, I'm talking the 1500s and earlier, they did not really spend a lot of time at sea. Most of the sailing was along the coast, and they were limited to latitude. It wasn't until the mid-1700s that a fellow invented a clock that was accurate enough to figure your longitude. Longitude goes east and west, and it's based upon the Greenwich Meridian. It's the longitude line that passes through Greenwich, England. Of course, it goes from the North Pole to the South Pole, but that's 0 degrees longitude. So if you're sailing west on your way to America, and you know the time in Greenwich, then you look for when the sun passes over top of you. Let's say it passes over your head at 1 o'clock Greenwich time. Then you know you are 15 degrees west of Greenwich, and that is your longitude. So really the chronometer was critical.
Yeah, I saw a documentary on that, and I learned about that and how hard it was to invent that. They couldn't get it quite right for it to work on a ship.
That's right.
And it changed everything.
Yes. His name was Harrison, and his he made four different ones as he got better and better at making these clocks, and they're all at the Greenwich Observatory just north of London.
Right.
I've been there and seen them. They're intricate pieces of art, really. And science. Yep. For that.
Sure. Anyway,
okay, so that's the basic idea. Now, what did you really ask me?
Well, okay, so... let me just ask you. So I read that celestial navigation is like 4,000 years old, but the sextant wasn't invented till like what? The late 1700s?
The mid 1700s. That's when...
Okay.
The sextant. Well, the sextant has a long history.
It
was called the a backstaff, a forestaff, a quadrant. Okay. It had different names. But it was around the early 1700s when they really narrowed it down to the sextant.
Okay.
Which is interesting to me anyway. That Lewis and Clark had one and took with him the sextant and they plotted their position. A lot of people don't understand don't know that celestial navigation works anywhere in the world.
They used it to measure the size of mountains, couldn't they?
That's altitude. That takes
better.
That's a different...
Okay.
But they configured, they were able to mark their latitude and longitude as they went out exploring the Louisiana Purchase for Thomas Jefferson.
Wow. Okay.
Now you
when people were on a ship, they would get like five people to take readings and see which one is the most consistent.
Actually, no.
That's... we're getting all the myths out of the way.
Yeah. No, navigation at sea was an art that was very restricted because 99% of the sailors were illiterate.
Oh,
they couldn't read. They couldn't use, all the data is now
in a chart
published in a nautical almanac.
It wow.
tells you where the sun is every day of the year, every second of the year.
Wow.
Well, they couldn't read that. So navigation was strictly the captain and a couple of his select officers could do it. Otherwise, no one could.
So how many people would be taking that reading?
The captain. Now, they were also... The executive officer or the first officer, whatever you want to call him, the guy right below the captain, he would be teaching the midshipmen. And part of his responsibility was to teach the midshipmen how to do celestial navigation. So every day at noon, they would go up on deck. And
what they thought was noon or
you have to figure out noon, which is what we still do today.
Okay.
We really use the same procedures today. At least I do, that they used in the 1800s. Captain Cook went out to the Atlantic. I mean, to the Pacific, to the islands and Australia, New Zealand, all that. And he used the Noon site just like we do today.
Okay. Wow. Okay. So, that kind of explains celestial navigation. And now, why is it relevant for sailors today?
Okay. Two or three reasons, really. With the invention of the chart plotter, it opened up sailing to just so many more people than ever could have had the courage to venture offshore. Now they can with the chart plotter. Well, that all works great. All those electronics, all those batteries, all that electricity on your boat and all that stuff. Hey, that's great. I've got a chart plotter. I've got a couple of them on my sailboat. However, you never know when all that stuff may fail. For example, a friend of mine left Pensacola going down on the Isla Mujeres race, and the bilge pump flood broke. The hose came off. It flooded the bilge. It flooded their batteries. And they had no chart plotter, nothing. All they had was the compass up by the wheel, which is, of course, not electrical. It's just strictly a mechanical compass floating in fluid. And they followed it to Mexico.
Oh, wow. No instrument of last choice.
Yes. No one on board.
Last resort.
No one on board knew celestial navigation.
Oh.
Otherwise, they could have, pulled out those tools. And the way I teach it and what I encourage. Now, there's a lot of ways to do celestial navigation with electronics. But I teach the manual way. No electricity involved. Now, I do encourage people to have a simple calculator from Walmart. It's like $13 or a couple of them to help do the, add degrees, minutes, and seconds. It's a little tricky. So other than that, it's all manual.
Analog.
Yes, it's all analog.
Okay. I think you're an analog kind of guy because I couldn't really find any social media on you. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, so anyway, that's one reason. Well, in an emergency, if all else fails, you can use the sextant and celestial navigation to find your way to the general vicinity of where you want to go. Your latitude, longitude, there's some inaccuracies involved. Okay. Another reason to learn it is because it's a lot of fun. I've sailed across the Atlantic to the Azores by myself. And when the weather is good, I never hear this from anybody else, but I will tell you, I was bored stiff.
I hear it.
Forward every day to evening twilight when I could take some sights. Because you can only sleep so much, there. Now there's times, of course, storms, what have you, but if the weather's good and the sails are set, what do you do? Well, you sit there and count the flying fish, I suppose. But anyway, so that's another reason. But above everything else, in all seriousness, it's good to know
for safety factors. Yeah,
have an emergency. Exactly.
Okay, so
electronics.
You're about to show us. So let's go to the next one. Basic tools and instruments used in celestial navigation.
Okay. All right. Let me describe it first. The sextant. Now, the sextant is nothing more than a fancy little protractor, like the kind you used in high school to measure angles. That's what it does.
That makes sense.
Yeah, you look through the eyepiece, through the other side, at what you're wanting to observe. Let's say the sun or the stars, and you move this arm to line it up through the mirrors here, and when you get it on you bring the sun down to the horizon of the ocean. And when you do, you'll read an angle right here. This is the angle, just like off a protractor. Well, of course, that means two things. Number one, you got to be able to see the moon if you're going to shoot the moon. If it's cloudy, you can't do it.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Sun, if the sun's behind a cloud, you can't do it. You have to wait till the next day. A star, same thing. Similarly, you've got to be able to see the horizon. That gives you the angle from the horizon up to, let's say, the sun. If it gets too dark and you no longer have the horizon, then you're done for the day. All right. Or if it's cloudy, it's hazy, it's foggy, and you don't see the horizon, you can't do it. So those are the limitations of
navigation. If it's cloudy, yeah.
You've got to be able to see the horizon and what you want to observe.
Okay.
So you, at the same time, you have to note the time. Now, Captain Cook took that chronometer, but I have two or three digital watches on my boat. Because I'm telling you, one will fail just when you need it.
Is that a dive watch or?
No, this is just a stopwatch.
Oh, okay.
Now I have a digital watch on my sailboat that is set to Greenwich Mean Time. In other words, it's set for 0 degrees longitude at the prime meridian.
Okay.
So there are different techniques, but you do need to know Greenwich Mean Time when you take your shot. If it's in the evening, say you're off Virginia, it's going to be, you know, it could be midnight, 11 o'clock at night, Greenwich time. You've got to know that because all the data that you use, all the data that you need out of the Nautical Almanac is based on Greenwich Mean Time. Not local time. It's Greenwich Mean Time. So you have to know
Greenwich what to subtract. Yeah,
that's right. Now there's another thing that, you know, people pretty serious about it will do is carry a shortwave radio.
Yeah.
On the sailboat, and you can dial that in, and it'll give you Greenwich Mean Time on the time hack on the shortwave radio.
Okay.
Okay. So, but anyway, you got to know the time. You got to get your angle. You have the time, and then you start doing the mathematics. Now, what you have to do is fill out a sight form. They're readily available. You fill out all this information. This part I'm showing you right now is what's necessary to observe the sun at noon. See, there's really not that much there. In 15 minutes, you write down your observation, you write down the time, you look up the sun's position in the Nautical Almanac, do a little add and subtract, either in your head or with your calculator, and poof, there is your latitude, longitude.
And how accurate is it?
Okay. That's everybody asked me two questions. I go to the Annapolis Boat Show
where I
sit and sell my book. I sit with the people that sell the sextants. I sit with them and I answer all the questions. Two things people always want to know. How long does it take?
And 15 minutes.
How accurate are you? Well, if you're going to shoot the sun at noon.
Okay.
All right. It's going to take you about 30 minutes. 15 minutes, you're taking observations because you're tracking the sun as it rises in the sky. Then 15 minutes to do the paperwork. Okay. So that's where all celestial navigators should begin. Learn to do that. Observing the sun at noon.
At noon.
Then when you become proficient, you can begin to observe the stars, the moon, the planets at twilight. And that is it's a little different process. And that will take you at least an hour.
Okay.
You've got to take the observations. Then you got to sit down at your navigation table and you've got to look up the data on three different objects. Let's say the moon, Sirius, the star Sirius, and Jupiter, for example. Then you get these lines of position. It takes about an hour to come up with those lines of position, and you plot them on a universal plotting sheet. This thing right here. And hopefully you've done well enough that the three lines will triangulate into a little, you know, they won't be perfect, but they'll get close enough, and that's where you're at. Now, remember, celestial navigation is not a science. This is an art. So you're, it's not like one or zero. No, you're going to have an error, a circle of error, a circle of probability of where you're, well, actually a triangle of probability of where you're at. And hopefully you're within 10 miles.
Okay.
5 miles on a nice flat sea. But if it's rough, the boat's rocking, you know, 10 miles. But once again, it's not to get you to your marina. It's to get you
just to get you to land. Yeah.
And so, hopefully your inlet, your port, whatever.
So my thought, I've never looked through a sextant, especially on a boat. I might have looked at it one through land, but even just using binoculars on it and it's rough waters, I can't get it to, you know. So how hard is it to take a sight when there's rough seas?
It if you're trying to observe the stars, it's very difficult because they're a little pinpoint of light. That's why most small boat sailors like me, like you, we shoot the sun at noon. Now you're generally going to be able to find the sun, right? It's up there. It's pretty
worried
bright.
About the water surface, you know, with it moving, you know.
Yes. It, once again, it's an art. You do the best you can. So
right.
I've been out there when it's so rough. Forget it. You can't. You got to wait till the next day.
Okay.
You're not on an airplane. You're not flying 500 miles an hour. You know, you're doing 4 knots, 6 knots. So hopefully you're far enough away from land that you can wait.
We have a comment from Instagram. I can't put it up, but I can read it.
Yep.
Blue Water Sales says, Captain Chris is knowledgeable. We all have become accustomed to technology. When that fails, you should know how to plot on a paper chart. That's right. And be proficient with celestial navigation. Thank you for your comment, Blue Water Sales. That's a great comment.
Oh, good. I appreciate that. Yeah. 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 So I've got a lot of videos on YouTube, and one of them is on accuracy. It's an art. There's a lot of inherent accuracies. I've had people say, well, I was within 400 yards.
Wow. That's
and
pretty good.
I go, well, that's pretty good considering when you plot on this universal plotting sheet or you transfer it to your paper, your pencil lead is half a mile wide.
Wow.
The bed on this thing is half a mile wide.
Okay.
So it's impossible to be within 400 yards.
Oh.
But, you know, I flatter them and say, good job.
You were thinking maybe that wasn't quite true.
Well, maybe they're sitting in a classroom and they've got an extra sharp piece of lead.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So we got to bring a pencil sharpener too.
Yes. Imagine you're on an open ocean chart. And you're going to use a pencil on that chart. That pencil lead is going to make a mark a mile, 2 miles wide.
Anyway, right.
It's like I said, it's an art. Another thing that you're going to need are another couple things. I just point this out to everybody. A good pair of dividers. Just like coastal navigation, you know? And then your dividers, you need a good pair of dividers, all for plotting.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
All for plotting. And for people that are interested, there's all kinds of videos on YouTube of people.
And we're going to talk about you. You do classes, right?
Yes, I do.
We'll talk about it at the end. So people have to pay. They have to keep watching to find out about that. We've got to keep them till the end.
Right.
And hopefully it's in Pensacola, which is just about an hour from me. So that's great.
Yeah.
Let me just go ahead and say online here that the way I found out about you is Captain Ralph. Shout out to Captain Ralph Bush. He was my, I don't know if you know how I know him. He taught me ASA 104 back in 2014. And I bought his wife, her boat. I bought her Catalina 25. And I kept that one for about 10 months. I sailed it to death. And then I upgraded to an Island Packet 27. And then 5 years later, upgraded to an Island Packet 320, which is what I have now.
Oh, uh-huh.
So, yeah. And so, and I did go through Captain Ralph's captain's class. And I did the upgrade too. Uh-huh. To master. So I just love Captain Ralph. So shout out to Captain Ralph. So he's the one that gave me your name. He said you taught him to do this.
Yeah, he set up a class for me at the Pensacola Yacht Club. And I taught a class there. I've taught a couple classes there.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about that at the end because I hope you do another one. So is that all the basic instruments? Okay. In your experience, why you kind of already answered that one. Common misconceptions or myths about celestial navigation. And how would you debunk them? We talked a little bit about that, but anything. Okay. I know you probably get a lot of dumb questions.
Well, people are intimidated by the idea.
Right.
I tell them, no. A midshipman back in the 1700s had to learn trigonometry.
Wow.
And then they had different processes where they also used logarithms. But, you know, that would have been pretty daunting for a 11-year-old boy to learn all that trigonometry, spherical trigonometry, by the way. Well, nowadays, that's no longer necessary. It's all in the publications. It's all just there. What you do is you get the form and you step through the form. You know, you study it online or you take a class. You take the form, you get a good manual to help you if you have any questions. And you just step through the form and look up the data. Now, there's always a chance that you'll, you know, go to the wrong column or whatever. So you got to be careful. But it's really not difficult at all. Like I said, particularly shooting the sun at noon, which is where everybody starts.
That's the easiest thing.
You can do that in 15 minutes. You could learn the basic processes and then practice it. And you don't have to go to your boat. You can go to the beach or you can do it in your backyard. There are.
Well, I want to say that I watched a movie, Adrift. Did you watch that? It was a 2018 movie. And it was a true story about the girl's name was Tammy Oldham Ashcraft, and she was on. It was 1983, so it was before GPS and all that. And they were taking a boat from, I think it was Australia to San Diego. Somebody hired them, and they got hit by a bad storm. And what do you call it when it goes like this, when the boat does that?
Capsize.
Not capsize. Where it goes from the back. Yeah. Yeah. And so the guy was lost. She didn't have anything. Like she didn't even have, sails or a mast or anything. And she got to Hawaii using a sext. She did rig up a little sail, but she used a sextant. And so they show in the movie her going through her charts and adding it up and everything. And there was some work to it, but she got herself close enough to Hawaii. And it just so happened a Chinese ship came by right before she got there and picked her up. That's a true story. And today I believe she's doing charters still. So it was a horrific experience for her. Like she didn't eat fish. Well, she started eating fish because she needed the fish. You haven't seen that movie?
Yes, I saw it.
Oh, okay.
Where she fantasized that she found her boyfriend or her husband and had him on board injured, and it was all just,
Yeah, I read the book after I saw the movie, and it explains a lot more.
Yes, yes, I'm sure it does. Now, there was another movie, not quite as well known, with Robert Redford.
I saw it.
Did you?
Yeah. Was he using a sextant on there? I thought, what was that one called? I can't remember. But it was a good one.
Yeah, he used that. He pulled out a sextant out of a box. I have that sextant. I mean, it's really the most popular sextant in America as far as good quality metal sextants.
Is that about $800? Let's talk about the price. Okay.
Well,
because they go up to thousands. I saw
inflation. Now it's thousand.
Okay.
It's an Astra 3B, but he takes out the sextant and he gets in his life raft and he teaches himself celestial navigation.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I
forgot.
It looked great, but for someone who knows celestial navigation, it was totally ridiculous.
It wasn't believable, okay?
Well, it made a good movie. I enjoyed it. I watched it 5 or 6 times.
That was a good movie. There was no talking other than Mayday, Mayday. That was
Yes.
But anyway, we digress. But hey, I think everybody should watch Adrift because how she survived, because that's a true story.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, there's a lot of those cases where sextants come in very, very handy.
Sure. But
you were asking about the misconceptions.
Yeah.
People think it's real complicated and it's not.
Okay.
If you want to learn it, you can learn it, particularly shooting the sun at noon. Now, when you start, which for me that I have a basic class and that's what we learn. Then I have an intermediate class and that's where we learn to shoot the moon, the stars, the planets, 4 planets we use. And that is a little more involved. The process is a little different, but once again, there's no mental gymnastics. It's just strictly fill out the form, look up the data.
Okay.
And if you have a good form, and by the way, I will admit to having the very best forms there are in my book, but if you follow the form, you really won't have
any. So people, Steve, that is analog. So you're going to have this paper on board.
That's right.
Yeah.
While everybody else is eating dinner, you're going to be sitting down there figuring out your position.
Oh, gosh. Okay. I'm on board. I'm ready for the next class. So
yeah.
Let's see. Tips and resources you would recommend to help them get started. I guess, either buy the book if you're a good – I like class.
Yes.
You know, that's like when there were some people that were taking the captain's class online, but when you get to the chart plotting and all that stuff, it's best just, I preferred to be in the classroom for that. And I'm a very digital person, but for something like that, I'd rather learn it in person.
Yes, yes. Well, I don't claim to be an Einstein. I'm very average in everything, but I got a good book and I learned it through the book because it's like I said, if you got a good form and a good book, really anyone can teach themselves. Now, of course, having a class is nice that you can ask questions and you can practice right there. You know, I teach it over a weekend. If you're going to get a book, it's going to take you a month to learn it if you're particularly dedicated. But if you have a class, in my class, it's all day Saturday and Sunday, and really, we learned it on Saturday and Sunday. We finish up a little bit, and then we spend the rest of the day doing problems. So everybody leaves knowing how to do it. It's just a question of sticking with it. Because if you don't, you're going to probably forget how to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like chart plotting. You have to practice that.
You got to practice.
So I've got the name. I also post these on audio podcast website. So for those who can't see what's on the screen, I've got the name of his book on the screen. Simple Celestial Navigation by the Heavens Made Easy by Commander Chris. Say your last name again.
Kreitlein.
Okay.
Kreitlein.
U.S. Navy retired.
Yeah.
Got to show some respect there for your service. Thank you for your service.
Yeah, I appreciate that. The book is, like I said, it's very simple. I wrote it for the working sailor. There's no, there's just a tiny little couple pages on theory in the back. But otherwise, the book is how to step through the form in the easiest way possible to get your position. It starts out, of course, on how to observe the sun for latitude, longitude. Now, while I'm on that, let me mention.
Okay.
I have to, my students have to be very careful. When you're out looking at this, when you're out observing the sun at local apparent noon, that's when the sun is over your head. It's not noon on your watch. This is when the sun is over your head, or actually on your longitude. Well, the sun is moving. Well, of course, I know that the earth goes around the sun, but in celestial navigation, we pretend the sun is going around the moon, around the earth. The sun is traveling across the sky 1,000 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So you got to be right on. That's why you go out, you figure up your noon, and you go out 15 minutes ahead of time, and you start taking shots. And you'll see your sextant angle getting bigger each time until it peaks. And then it'll start getting smaller as the sun is descending. If you go out there and it's descending, you missed it already. And I've done that. So you got to get out there 15 minutes ahead of time because the sun is moving fast. Now, because of that, the position at local apparent noon that you will get may be off 10, 15 miles. That's about as good as you're going to get because the sun is moving so fast. The stars are moving very slowly. So actually shooting the stars in the evening generally will give you a better, more accurate position. But it is a little more complicated.
I was amazed during the eclipse. I was watching all the coverage.
Yes.
How fast the moon shadow was going, 1,900 miles an hour, like a plane can't keep up with it.
Yes.
I was like, wow. And they would show, you know, fighters up there trying to get the shot of it.
Yeah.
But they can't follow it.
the Earth spins, you know, in 24 hours, 24,000 miles around. So, 1,000 miles an hour, it's moving pretty quick.
It's so amazing. It's just this stuff's going on that we don't even pay attention to.
That's right.
We talked about that story about Captain Tammy and how she made it to Hawaii and then the ship came by. Can you think of any other recent stories or even historical stories where somebody was able to use this and save their lives? Or
I know a related story very well. It's one of the top 50 adventure books, and it's called Adrift also. And
wow.
I can't remember the fellow's name, but he was in a life raft for 65 days.
Whoa.
Floated from the coast, from off the coast of France all the way down to the Caribbean. And he made,
sounds
funny, but he had a pencil or a couple pencils. He broke them and made a little triangle and used it to measure his latitude as he was floating across the ocean. And he made it. It's Steve Callahan, I believe is his name. It's a very good book.
Okay.
If people want to read it, Adrift Across the Atlantic in 65 days or something. Of course, he ate fish and he had a couple solar stills, old World War II.
Now, did he mean to be on this? Did he mean to be on this life raft?
No. He was on a boat alone, and he hit something, or something hit him. I suspect he hit a container, which is the same thing that happened to Robert Redford in that movie. But you know, there are containers that fall off these container ships floating around out there. But for some reason, his boat hit something. Could have been a whale. Who knows? But it went down in about 10 minutes, and he spent the next 65 days in his underwear and t-shirt. Okay. I'm not hearing anything now.
Sorry about that. Okay, oh, okay. So I copy and pasted this from Instagram.
Yes.
From Blue Water Sails. I'm a member of the U.S. Coast Guard on an SAR team. We rescued a solo sailor in the middle of the Gulf. His vessel was hit by lightning, lost all electronics. He did not know celestial navigation.
Yes, yes. He should have taken my class and been ready.
Yeah, he was in the Gulf. He's probably close by.
Yeah, I wonder. well, like I told you, my friends, or this guy I knew was out there in the Gulf of Mexico on the way to Mexico, and their bilge flooded. So it does happen. It does happen.
He said that fortunately he filed a float plan and his wife called the Coast Guard and we found him.
Oh,
nice. Yeah.
Very nice. Very nice.
Did he have a locator device, Blue Water Sails? Oh, he's, you know, when I'm crossing the Gulf, I have a personal device attached to my vest. So we'll see what he says. They found him though.
Good.
And also call early when you're having trouble. Call the Coast Guard early. Say, hey, I don't know what's going to happen, but this is starting to happen. I just want you to know where I am.
Yes.
I did that recently on a Gulf crossing that was really, really rough.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And they checked on me every 30 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Until I was tied up. So, because I'd heard stories of people maybe having told their brother-in-law that there was a problem, but the brother-in-law never called the Coast Guard, and pretty soon they disappeared, and they just found remnants of the boat and lost a whole family. So that's the lesson of the day. Tip of the day, call early, right?
Call early if you're having trouble. That's for sure. Another thing, while you're talking about safety issues, I am a very strong proponent of AIS.
Yes, I've got that.
Your loved ones, I think it's $1 a day. They can track you by satellite and know where you're at all the time.
And if you have an inReach, and I do.
Oh, yes. Oh, there's all. Isn't it a wonderful world we live in? We've got all.
Well,
these,
you know,
things.
This is not the world of Christopher Columbus.
No,
we
can.
No, it's not. It's not as scary as it used to be. People always say, "How do you do that? Aren't you scared?" And I go, "Well, I respect it, but I've got all the technology, and I try to be responsible." And
yes. The downside of that is that there's a lot of people out there that shouldn't be out there.
Oh, true.
Because
I see them.
The fear factor is gone for so many people. But
right.
It's I would have to say, compared to a lot of other sports, sailboating is very safe sport.
Sure. And Blue Water Sail says no, they did not have a personal locator device.
Oh, uh-huh. Yeah.
So he had his wife. So that the float plan and the wife.
Yeah, yeah.
And
locator devices.
And fortunately with the Gulf, there's land in many directions.
Yes.
All right, so let's see. So obviously, celestial navigation is going to continue to be relevant, even though people might not think so. But I guess that's it. I guess that's all I have, unless you have something.
Well, you know, I can always ramble on about a few things.
Yeah. What do I not know to ask? What do you want people to know?
Okay, I did not attend the Naval Academy. However, I park at the Naval Academy when I go to the Annapolis.
Next best thing.
But everybody stops and tells me that the Naval Academy is once again teaching celestial navigation. They stopped for a while, but there are concerns. There are threats to GPS, you know, by our enemies.
Right, right.
And in fact, Great Britain has reinitiated Loran over there.
That was before GPS, right?
That was before GPS. That is
right before.
I've never used it, but it was kind of a triangulation system.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think that's what Tanya, the 18-year-old who went around the world, she used. She got to Bermuda or the Bahamas or something on it, and she found out she was doing it wrong, but she got there anyway.
Yes,
yeah. But she crossed the Atlantic with nothing, not even a motor.
Wow, yeah. Yeah. people take a lot of chances and survive. That's good to know.
Yeah. But yeah, so you have to triangulate something with radar, is it? What is it?
The Loran, they're signals. Yeah. And you have a box. Of course, it's electronic. If it fails, you can't use it. But it gives you these lines of position that you have to plot to determine your position. That's Loran. But apparently, it doesn't use satellites. It uses shore-based transmission stations. You know, years ago, if you read some of the books from the 60s about Robert Knox Johnson, for example, the first guy to sail nonstop alone.
Oh, yeah. When was that? Was that in the 1800s?
Or? No. No, he was 1962 or something.
Oh, okay.
But he sailed alone around the world, the first guy, nonstop. And he used radio direction finders, and they're very hard to find nowadays. But theoretically, you could dial in a very strong radio station, and then find another, and where they triangulate, of course, with this direction finder. But I'm not sure they even make them anymore. So with all the GPS involved and all of that. That stuff has been abandoned pretty much.
Right. Yeah. And when did that go into effect? Late 80s? When did the public get it?
What's
the
that?
GPS. When?
Yeah. The late 80s.
Wow.
I flew in an airplane in the Navy, but we had inertial navigation in the airplane. So I never really used GPS until I started sailing.
Well, we have about 15 watching live, 15 people. So if you're on Facebook or YouTube, or even, I can even see you comments on Instagram, please ask a question, make a comment, something. I'm sure people have questions out there.
Yes.
So where's your next class?
Well, I'm teaching a class on the 28th, or the 27th and 28th of this month, the last weekend of April. And I do have space for a couple other people. If anybody watching this would like to attend, you know, they can contact me.
How do they find you?
Well, my phone number is 850-776-2976.
Okay, I'm going to put this on the screen.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, people can call me, and I'm teaching it here in Cantonment, just north of Pensacola. I have a classroom. We'll learn how to observe the sun at noon, and we'll go out and take an observation of the sun. But call me with any questions.
Okay. I'm trying to get your title right. I want to give you all the respect you deserve.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate that retirement check from the American taxpayer, too. Appreciate that.
Yeah. I looked up what Commander is and what they do, and I had to educate myself a little bit. It's very impressive.
Oh, so, well, thank you.
Well, okay. Well, I guess that's it. We don't have any questions or anything. There'll be, there's 16 people in here now. I was hoping somebody would have a question. Ask a question. But there'll be, the people watching now, but there'll be thousands that watch the replay. So,
Well, if anybody has any questions, you know, they can always send me an email.
Let me get
it's just C. No, no. Let me give you this one. Celeste Nav. CELESNAV, like celestial navigation, celestnav@yahoo.com.
Old school.
I always like to talk celestial navigation.
Sounds like it.
Write me anytime.
There it is. 850-776-2976 or Celeste. Do I have that right? Celeste Nav?
Yep, that's it.
Not a T.
I could finish my part by just talking about sextants for a second.
Let's do it.
Okay. People always want to know what, if I'm interested, what kind of sextant should I buy? Well, okay, so you've got to ask yourself, how serious are you about it? How often do you think you're going to use it? And how much money do you want to spend? There are plastic sextants, like I showed you, that's plastic. And okay. It works great. It works fine. Now, of course, it's not going to be as accurate as a $5,000 Japanese sextant.
Japanese. But, okay.
Yeah, yeah. To my
I got this one off of Amazon.
Yes, take that's an expensive sextant.
That one's about $899,
I think. Oh, no, that's the Astra 3B. That's the one. I've got one of those, too.
I thought it looked familiar.
Yeah, but believe it or not.
This one's plastic?
That's metal. I prefer my plastic one. Now, you may say, what? First of all, accuracy is generally going to be dependent on so many different things. How rough is it? How good are you? How is the horizon? How is your plotting? How thick is your pencil lead? All of that stuff. That the sextants will all give you a reading close enough to get your position without any difficulty. So it's really a question of how much you want to spend. You can go on eBay and find one. A student I have just that's coming here at the end of the month, you know, talked to me. He just went on eBay and bought one. You can buy a brand new plastic sextant for around $200. They're very good. Or you can buy the $900 sextant. Or once again, you can get a German Freeberg sextant or a Japanese Tamiya sextant.
And there was cardboard ones too.
Okay. I have one of those. It's more of a learning tool.
And I gotcha.
Something to play with to show people. I put it together with Elmer's glue and it works. Don't get me wrong, it works, but I wouldn't want to get it wet. That Elmer's glue might not hold up. But anyway, so anywhere from, I would say, $100 on up to $2,000, $3,000, there is a brand new sextant coming out that I have tested that has an electronic gizmo on it. It's made in South Korea. And you take three shots, push the button, and it gives you your latitude, longitude. Oh. Well, that works great as long as the batteries last. But once I'm more of a manual type guy in doing this. I want to be able to do it when everything else fails.
If you're going
to
do that, might as well just use
GPS.
Your GPS.
There you go. My thought exactly. That was in my review of it too. Anyway, so, you know, all of those sextants work. It's just really how much you want to spend on one. Now, remember also, if you're shooting the sun at noon, you're holding that sextant for 15, 20 minutes. And that metal sextant can get kind of heavy. And if you drop the plastic one over the side accidentally, okay, buy another one. If you drop the metal one, you're going to be jumping in after it, okay?
Okay.
I say that in jest, but anyway.
So you tie a string around it, right?
Yes. Yes, that's right.
Make so sure the plastic one doesn't float?
Well, it's got a string on it too, so put it. Okay. Yeah, I've never dropped a sextant, so I hope I never do.
All right. Well, if anybody wants to take the class, you can contact them directly. If you didn't write the number down or something, and you could always replay the video, but you can contact me, saltyabandon @gmail.com, and I'll give you the info. I don't know if I can make that class because I got some things going on, but I sure would like to do one of your classes.
Sure. I'll contact you.
Count me in. I'm all about the education.
Yes.
All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on. It's great to meet you.
A lot of fun.
And maybe we'll have you back. Let me find my outro video. And what I like to say at the end of every video is Salty Abandon, out.